Welcome back to It Doesn't End Here podcast. I'd like to give a trigger warning for today's episode. It includes financial abuse, substance abuse, gaslighting, and manipulation. Listener discretion is advised. You're listening to It Doesn't End Here.
Emily. I'm a personal executive assistant. I work for multiple clients. I basically try to make sure that their lives go smoothly while mine is like organized chaos. I have a couple kids and an outdoorsy husband, a cat, a dog running around. So there's a lot going on all the time. I'm in my early 40s, but I still mostly feel like I'm about 25, except my body says differently because I'm always tired and my back hurts. I've lived all over the place. I started out in the Midwest, grew up there, and went to college there. And then I've been all over since. I lived on the West Coast for about a decade. Now I'm on the East Coast and not planning to move anytime soon. I can get to the beach, I can get to the mountains, and it's pretty peaceful here. So I like it a lot. I was reading in a book the other day, and it said that the author said she was an unyielding extrovert, and I really latched onto that phrasing because I love it so much. And that is pretty much who I am. I love people, and that's pretty much why I'm sharing my story, because it makes it impossible when you love people so much not to tell what happened in hopes somebody else could be able to leave their situation and move on from abuse just like I did.
How did you meet this person, and what are we going to call him?
We're going to call him Todd. And I met him at a bar, as cliche as that sounds. I had lived in LA for 4 years, and he had just moved there like a week and a half before we met. And I was planning, I went to a play with a friend, and then was supposed to meet another friend. It was going to be like a full night. She canceled, but I'm halfway there. So I'm like, I'm going to keep going because LA would take me as long to get home as it would to get there. So I just kept going. And I was like, well, my friend's the bartender. Like, I'll have people to talk to. It's fine. But technically, I went there alone, which is the first time I've ever done that. And he was there with a group. I was talking to a bunch of different people just throughout the night. And then whenever my friend wasn't busy, which he was pretty slammed because it was like a Friday or a Saturday, I would chat with him. And so it's interesting because when I look back, every time Todd told the story of how we met, he kind of made me look like this lonely, pathetic person sitting on a bar stool. Nobody with me. And that's not at all how it was or how I felt about the situation. And I guess he came up a few times to get drinks for his group and saw me. But at that particular time, I wouldn't be talking to somebody. So then he painted this picture of like, oh, you know, woe is her. Let me go talk to her and rescue her from loneliness or something. So we started chatting, and I can pretty much talk to anybody. So we chatted for a while, and he was asking me what I did for work, you know, the typical get to know you questions. And I think we exchanged info because I had said, you know, if you want someone to show you around, like I've had some friends come from the Midwest and shown them around, and I've been here for quite a while, and I wouldn't mind giving you a little tour. And then I also had told him that if his friends were around the next day, one of my friends was playing a concert. And so we exchanged numbers, and he texted me, I think, later that night because they had left and went to get fast food or something. And then we texted the next day, and he said he was going to come to the show, but just him. But I was looking forward to it because I was like, well, you know, I didn't think anything romantic the first night. Really, it was just like another person to add to my group of friends or whatever it might be.
What were you attracted to from him initially, like right off the bat?
We had similar banter styles. He was very charismatic, which, you know, is pretty typical of people that end up being like this. He was funny, but like in a different kind of way. My family has kind of more of a dark humor, sarcastic, quick wit, that kind of thing. I really liked that about him. I don't particularly remember like something that first night, because like I said, I didn't put him in like a romance category right away. But I did think, oh, he's nice. Like he seemed really down to earth and nice. We talked about religion and stuff like that. And so that kind of was one of the things that I was like, oh, this is cool, because most of the guys I dated could care less about that or about being open and honest and getting deeper. So it was kind of refreshing to have somebody who was really comfortable talking about things and open.
Was that something that was really important to you, was kind of dating somebody who understood your beliefs and who also shared those beliefs?
Definitely. I mean, I didn't need like a carbon copy or somebody who was raised just like I was or anything like that, because I was raised pretty conservatively. And by this point, you know, I'm 28. And so I'd been out of high school for 10 years, right? And I'd gone to a Christian school and then a Christian college. And so I was kind of making my faith my own, definitely a hybrid of what I grew up with, but also, you know, going to church because I wanted to go to church, not because it's Sunday, we go to church, like not living by those strict standards of parental control or the structure of a school or an environment like that. And so I was open to, you know, if he had other ideas or insights.
You're open to seeing what his point of view was.
Yes. I wasn't strident about like, you have to fit in this box in order for us to be together. So we exchanged numbers and I think he texted me that night. And then the next day I was like laying out at the pool and he said he was working, which I was like, oh, that's impressive. It's a Saturday. You know, I was definitely not working. And my friend's show was like at 10 or something. So I invited him to meet me there. And I had said, like, if you don't want to drive back home, you can crash on my couch, because at that time he was living like an hour and a half out from LA. So I didn't want him to have, you know, any drinks and then drive or anything like that. Was not flirting in that capacity. I literally just wanted him to be safe. And I said the next day I could give you a little tour of LA. That's what happened. He slept on my couch. There was no funny business. I don't even think we hugged or anything. Like, there was nothing happening. And then I gave him a tour the next day, went to a couple of my favorite restaurants, drove him around, just, you know, answered questions about the town. And he was interested in moving closer in, obviously, and was interested in directing. And so we talked about that in the industry, and I was working as a personal assistant within the industry. So he seemed kind of like impressed by that a little bit. Potentially his, you know, feelers went for, ooh, this could be somebody I could use in the future. I don't know. But at the time I had no clue of that, obviously.
So what did he say his job was?
He did graphic design and he worked from home. So he had clients, you know, from all the places he had lived that he would do web design or logos or whatever. And that's what he said he was doing, but he was interested in becoming a film director or some sort of director, which is why he was out in LA. So we texted like all throughout the week after I had given him that little tour. I think we made a plan to go to a movie or something real casual the next weekend. I wasn't even sure if I was romantically interested. We hadn't talked really that way. There wasn't like heavy flirting or anything like that. So we went to a movie. I don't think we held hands or anything. And then we were hanging out and he asked if he could kiss me. And so I was like, oh, okay. And I still wasn't really like sure if I was putting him in a friend category or a dating category. But honestly, I had been dating in LA for a few years and it had been really awful. Just a lot of ghosting, I'm just way too Midwest. I do not understand people who just disappear and don't talk to you again. It's very strange to me. I'm just more of what you see is what you get. And he seemed that way, which is really hilarious now. Not hilarious in a good way, but it's just like, I thought he was what you see is what you get. But he was really forthcoming, like, hey, here's my intentions, you know? And I appreciated that because I had dated a guy for over a year. We had seen each other, you know, not consistently, but we didn't even say we were dating. So it just felt kind of nice. Also, just him being so upfront about his feelings was refreshing. And so that was really nice for me, just to feel like I knew where I stood and he was interested and I knew that, and I could kind of relax into it a little bit. Within a couple of weeks, we were like boyfriend, girlfriend and hanging out a lot. I'm trying to remember, I think within the first month is when he like moved closer. Once he moved like about 25 minutes away from me. So then we saw each other more and we were pretty inseparable. Like, I mean, not sharing space, but we would hang out on the weekends and sometimes during the week meet up for a date or whatever.
Were there any like red flags or anything that happened in the first couple of weeks while you were dating and getting to know each other?
I mean, he would sometimes go radio silent a little bit and like it would be at weird times. Like I remember my mom was in town and in LA, they have this like, I forget what it's called, but they show movies in the cemetery at Hollywood Forever. It's like very well known and people bring stuff and they show like old movies and sometimes they'll interview cast members and stuff. So it's always fun. We went to that and he was like dead quiet all day, like no responses to anything, which I knew how much he had his phone on him. I also knew how much he was sitting at his computer if he was supposedly working. And like I'd invited him and he said he couldn't come, but my mom had come across the country. So it just seemed odd and it definitely put me in a really bad mood because I felt like he was giving me the silent treatment, but I didn't have those words for it. And then he was like, what? Nothing. Like I just was busy. And I'm like, okay. But it was so out of character with how much we usually texted and things that it was kind of like an odd day for me. And the other thing was the first night we met, you know, he went by two different names, which is not that big of a red flag simply because in LA people do that. Like my boss at the time went by a different name. He had a stage name and he had his legal name. So that didn't raise a huge red flag, except for Todd, it clearly was more about hiding than it was about identity and that kind of thing. Like it wasn't a stage name because he wasn't doing anything. It was just kind of a rejection of his past in trying to hide from things that might be chasing him, but I didn't know that. And then I remember we were walking my dog and he like took the leash and kind of smacked me on the butt with it. And I just said, stop. I didn't say it mean. I just said, hey, can you quit? That kind of stings. And he just kept doing it. And so by the time we got back to my apartment, I was irritated. And I said, hey, can you like, that's annoying. Like it reminds me of my sister's ex-boyfriend who would kind of do teasy, pinchy, like things like that. And if I said to stop, he wouldn't. And he's like, well, that sounds like an issue for you. Which to me, I was like, there was no ownership or any like, oh, this is my new girlfriend. She doesn't like this, which typically I think most people would be like, oh, I won't do that. But I mean, he also was very, on the other side of it, romantic. And he would take me out on a lot of dates, which other people, you know, I'd had the one guy who literally left me at a bar with the tab and no car. And I'm like, cool, great. So my bar was real low. You know, I still had standards for myself, but I had not been treated the best for the last few years. And he was really gentlemanly in that way. And also because he did graphics, he would make me like a monthly anniversary card, like homemade. I mean, not like he's getting craft supplies, but he was making it on the computer, printing it out. It was all cardstock, like pretty creative stuff. Like he showed up at my house once when I was sick, unannounced, and brought me like orange juice and stuff and then just left and went home. Like no expectation, but just kindness. And it was short-lived, but at first, you're trying to like, you know, get that person back, but that person is the facade, unfortunately. But at the time, I was like, oh, he's really nice and down to earth. And he has this, you know, he didn't have a lot of history. That's one thing that now is a red flag is I blamed it on the fact, I didn't blame it. I chalked it up to, I should say, the fact that he had left his religion because he was raised Jehovah's Witness and had been disfellowshipped, which is their version of like the Amish. What do they call it in the Amish? I can't think. Shunning. Yes, it's like that.
Wait, so he was shunned from his religion?
Right, but they call it disfellowshipping.
Wow, okay.
Because of that, I was like, well, then it makes sense that he's not like in you know, communication with these people because it was his whole life. Like it's a very insulating religion. And so you're only really, like he was only really allowed to socialize with those kids at school. So I kind of dismissed the fact that he didn't have these like long-term friendships to the fact that he left this religion where all his people were.
Why was he shunned or why did he decide to leave?
He didn't go into great detail. I know at one point it had been, he had premarital sex and like the girl confessed that. And so then he went down as well. They had been engaged at that time and she called it off and then confessed. So he had to like sit in the back for a year and like he worked his way back in. And then a few years later, he got disfellowshipped again. And I don't know what happened that second time. I think he mentioned cocaine at some point. So I don't know if that, you know, it's one of those where maybe somebody turned him in on something and he just wasn't willing to do the hoops to get back reinstated because the ego was getting bigger. The willingness to kind of go through the steps required, it just wasn't there. So because of that, you know, I just felt like, well, you know, I have a lot of friends from childhood, but most of them were through church or through sports or whatever, but they weren't allowed to play sports. And he also was born with club feet. And so he couldn't really play sports. So he didn't have like that community anymore.
Is club feet where your toes are all webbed together?
No. Club feet is they're like turned. I forget if they're turned inward or outward, but the ankle is kind of, I think they're like this sideways. And so he had a bunch of surgeries to basically break his ankles.
Oh, thank God.
I know, as a baby. So I know, terrible. And it was both of his feet. So he had all these casts and like surgeries and stuff. And so definitely not without sympathy for that. But he used that a lot as an excuse for everything. That and things with his brain. It was either he was the smartest person or he had a mental illness and it wasn't his fault. But it was never like anywhere between those two. He had told me pretty early on, I mean, a few months, he didn't want me to ever apologize for him. Like if we were out at a restaurant and the waitress didn't understand his humor, as he would say, don't apologize for me. That really bugs me. Da, 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 da. And I'm thinking in my head, like, is this going to come up a lot that I'm going to need or have this the urge to apologize for you? And the answer is yes, but I did not know that. He just said, people don't get my humor. And I'm like, well, if you're going to be mean, like I'm going to want to tell, you know, pull someone aside and be like, sorry, because that's my nature. It was that. And then when we held hands, when we were like standing up, he told me he wanted his hand in the front because he felt like if my hand was in the front or on top, I guess that I was leading him, like dragging him along, which it took a long time for me to default to that because you don't even think about it until he put it on my radar. And then I was like, oh crap, my hand's in front. Like, and I would just have to switch because it bugged him. And so I adapted to that.
Wow.
But that is a giant red flag when I look back because it shows so much need to control something that should be just so natural became almost forced in my head where I had to like, where's my hand? Okay. And then like it really takes you out of the moment, you know, of what you're feeling to grab your partner's hand.
Yeah. I feel like narcissists and not even just narcissists, some sort of sometimes just toxic people in general will play these little games where they set up these little tests to see if you'll pass it. It's almost like planting the seed for future fights because mm-hmm. they set up five or six little tests that you have to comply with daily, mm-hmm. like holding your hand in the correct way, putting the dishes in the dishwasher the correct way. These are all very small, subtle things, but if you don't do it correctly, then it'll lead to a massive fight. And
right.
ultimately, it's just all control to keep you in line.
Right. It's like a trial run with, you know, the tiny little eggshells and then eventually they're everywhere. I'm much less now a people pleaser just because I've gotten a backbone through all of this. But I really was. I was a pleaser. I just wanted people to be happy around me, kind of a little bit of a golden retriever. I just fell right into it because it was just easier. And I didn't have a ton of strong opinions. Like if he wanted to go to a Mexican place, I'd be like, cool, I'll find something I like there. And it's not, you know, that's just how I am even now with like food or movies or like I can pretty much be happy with most things. And so I'm pretty adaptable. And I think he saw that as like, she will adapt to me. I mean, I really didn't think it was that big of a deal. It was little things. It was little. So it didn't really even register. It only really registers now when I put it all together. So in the time, you know, it's pretty easy to dismiss like the dog leash. It really didn't hurt me. But what it stood for became a much bigger thing. Another thing that was a problem was just that he and my sister butted heads and she lived out there at the same time that I did. And we moved there together and we were very, very close. And they just didn't, at first they got along. And then they're just, she actually just told me this story a few weeks ago that I had completely forgotten or maybe blocked or something where we were all at a party in Orange County A bunch of our friends were musicians. And so we were at a house party for a band friend of mine. And at that time, Todd, we were newly dating and he was losing his hair a bit. And so he was a little self-conscious about it. He would kind of like comb it forward or whatever. He ended up eventually shaving his head. But at this time he would wear a lot of hats, like just a ball cap. And my sister kind of like tapped his hat just in conversation, or they were talking about something and it fell onto the grass. And he like picked it up, put it back on, and kind of slapped her across the face as a joke.
Oh my God.
Yes. And she said it didn't hurt, much like the dog leash thing, but it was, she said she took a minute and was like, whoa, did that just happen? And then registered like, that is not okay. Like, you just touched me in the face and you like slapped me in the face. And so she just said after that point, she was just kind of done. And that was like our first 6 months, I think. So that created some tension. I just thought she was kind of jealous that I was moving forward with life, and not in like a, oh, she's so jealous, she's thinking about this a lot, but just she's not adapting to the fact that I'm getting into a committed relationship. There's some adjustment period that needs to, you know, happen because we'd always been so, so close and we talked every day. We used to live together. So it's just changing and she's having a hard time. But now I realize she saw some things I didn't because she wasn't romantically involved. She had no like skin in the game that way. And so she wasn't looking at it with clouded judgment. She was looking at it like, this guy's kind of a jerk, you know?
That is such a big red flag. It is so passive aggressive.
No, and it's just such an invasion of personal space. It's like a power thing. It's a lot. Your face especially. Like, you could just tap someone on the shoulder or like, but to touch someone's face is so intimate and also just, yeah, it's like, ooh, not a...
Man, that gives me chills. So mm-hmm. What did your sister have to say about all that now?
I mean, she just kind of said that that was one of the things that she really didn't like. And then she just didn't like how he would kind of interrupt me in talking. And she just felt like I kind of was fading a little bit, she would say. And I didn't see it because it was a slow boil. It was not quick.
Mm-hmm. I would say that that's a big thing. Anyone that I talk to, if it's like a sibling or a friend and they're talking about, you know, the woman who's going through it, mm-hmm. fading away, like fading into nothing, having no opinion, having mm-hmm. no desire. These are all red flags that kind of happen when you fall into the black hole of a toxic relationship.
Right. Well, and it's so interesting because I was thinking about this the other day that I still don't really know what my personal style is because when I got out of that, I was like, I don't even know what I like because he was controlling in that way. He didn't like certain colors. He didn't like my hair certain ways. He didn't, you know, notice I'm not saying things he did like.
Maybe I should ask you that. What did he like?
I don't know. Like the things that he liked at first, which were, you know, my independence and my strength and my humor and my smarts or whatever, like were all things that he picked on me for later.
Those were your strengths. And so he wanted mm-hmm. to tear you down and intimidate you.
Right. And second guess that they even existed. You know, like I started to be like, I mean, I remember, you know, later on, I would be saying in my head, you are smart. You're smart. Remember, you're smart. Because I felt he would talk down to me so much and act like I was just, you know, the whole problem is me. And everyone who has to deal with me would be like this. Which, strangely enough, no one was before him and no one has been after him. But yes, I am the problem, of course, because you can't, you know, they can't take ownership. So it's always somebody else's fault. And if you're the person on the other side of that, it's you. I would say one of the biggest things that happened that was pretty devastating to me, and I got a bunch of missed calls. I checked one of the voicemails and it just had a recording of him and it said it was from the jail. So I was like, what is happening? I had no idea. So I try to call back the number. Obviously you can't call someone directly. So then I get transferred to some like line where she tells me that he's been arrested for theft. And I'm like, what? So she says, girl, you better run. And I'm like, well, it's my boyfriend. Like, I don't understand. Can you tell me anymore? And she's like, you're going to have to find out from him. I can't really tell you anymore except for how it's categorized. He ended up calling again and I answered and we had a conversation and he basically just dismissed it. And was like, oh, I don't know why they said it was theft. Like when I drove across the country to move here, I got two tickets with it, like two speeding tickets within an hour. And I forgot about them and I didn't pay them. So I guess there was a warrant. And I guess they say, you know, they categorize it maybe as theft because like I stole from the state of Texas. And I'm like, I mean, that seems weird to like, I don't think that would be enough to get someone pulled over. I think you'd probably have a fine or maybe a court date, but I don't think you'd get arrested for that. I mean, I don't know. And so he said, yeah, I ran a stop sign over at Costco and somebody pulled me over and they saw that warrant. So they took me in. And at the time, like my feelers kind of went off a little bit because he was over in my neighborhood. And I think we had hung out that morning and then he had gone home, which was like 40 minutes the other direction. So it didn't make sense that in the afternoon he would be back by my house, but not with me. Like it was just a strange, it didn't make sense geographically, especially with LA and how spread out it was. And what I ended up finding out, which he did not tell me for a whole year, is that he had been stealing Blu-rays. So what he would do is he would get like cases of water and he would get Blu-rays and put them underneath, or he'd put them in the cart flat and then put the cases of water on top. And they would just scan the water and not see what was underneath. And then he would go online and sell them. Well, apparently he'd done it at a bunch of different Costcos. So he was like making the rounds to make sure that he wasn't like at the same one so he wouldn't get caught. But guess what? Video surveillance, he did get caught. And so he got pulled into some back room and got arrested. So I'm trying to figure out bail. Like I'm calling like a bondsman and the guy's like laughing at me because he's like, you know, I think it was like $1,000. He's like, yeah, I work in like the big, the big range. You don't need me. Like you just need to get $1,000 to the jail. I'm Googling where is the courthouse. I'd had jury duty, but it was like at a different spot. All of these things are just so out of my like realm of experience or knowledge. And his roommate went with me and we drove downtown. It's like dead of night on like a late Saturday. I was supposed to go to a birthday party that I was looking forward to. My day is shot. I told my sister because I was like, I have to tell somebody what is going on. And I was supposed to go to the party with her. And she was just like, dump him, of course, because they've already had all this tension. And she was like, you don't even know this guy, which in retrospect, I should have listened to her. But I did feel like I did know him. I'd been dating him for a year and a half. You know, we were in love at this point. We were talking about the future. And I just thought, well, you know, he has an answer, but he always had an answer. It just wasn't really based in fact. So I went and picked him up and he came out, you know, like a puppy with his head down, like Arrested Development, George Michael walking in, you know, from the just slumped over. And so because his feelings were so intense about what he had experienced and gone through, like I wasn't able to process how it felt to be on the outside of it, who's getting, you know, the person getting the call about your boyfriend in jail.
You know, those types of things really can like mess with your head of like, what is reality? Like, what is true?
I mean, those little things. And then also, like, he kind of pressured me to move out of my apartment. He disguised it as protection because there had been a couple instances. We had a door guy. They filmed in my building all the time because it was very like New York looking. And so it would be used for all sorts of things. There was one night where I was walking my dog and this guy kind of followed me, but like at a distance where I didn't feel incredibly intimidated, but he was kind of whispering under his breath at me. And so I turned around a couple times just because I was like, is that guy talking to me? But it wasn't so close that I felt really scared, but I did walk over to a security guard who was standing by a trailer, like a trailer for the movie that they were shooting, and just said, hey, I'm going to stand here for a minute. And he was like, oh, okay. And the guy walked past and then I went back home. So I had told him about that. And so then he's like, you have to move out of that building. But he really pressured that to the point that I was like, okay, there's a point there, you know, like, I guess I should. And so I did move. And I don't know if that was just because I lived by myself and it was like my first real spot that I didn't live with my sister and I was doing my own thing. And it was really good for me. But he saw that independence maybe as a negative and tried to kind of see if he could get me to make a big decision like that.
After all of these things kind of going on and you starting to see the red flags, you know, what was the next step in your relationship?
A year later, he had gotten a vaporizer and he was smoking a lot of pot because he felt like his brain needed it and it made him more creative and it made him a genius. And he would just like kind of just smoke and be, and like he would, he ended up taking a couple of shower doors and making them into like a giant dry erase board. And he would just write ideas all over it and then take a picture of it with his phone and then erase it all and write again. I mean, it was just like beautiful mind kind of stuff where you're like, whoa, there's a lot happening.
What were the things he would write down on the doors?
Oh, it could be completely random. It could be like some weird like story from the Bible that he thought was different than it was. You know, I mean, it could be the weirdest thing. It could be an invention. It could be an idea for a website or a product or a future, you know, house. Or, I mean, it was all across the board. There was no, And the weirdest part was that when he would come down off the high, like he would still think it was really smart. Even though most people would look at it and be like, what was I thinking? Like if you wrote a note when you're drunk and you're like, that makes no sense. Like he still sort of thought it was really smart. So one night he had smoked and it made him really manic, which from what I have read about pot, most people, it does not make them manic. It makes them chill. He had the opposite reaction, which is pretty common with a mental issue. He was hyper. I mean, he would talk a mile a minute. Then he would be like, what do you think of that? And you're like, which part of the last 14 minutes that you talked straight at me am I supposed to respond to? It's very overwhelming. So one of those nights he calls me and we talked for, I think, 4 hours. I would say I talked, you know, 11 minutes of those 4 hours. And he finally confessed to what had actually happened that night, told me all about the Costco thing, told me he'd done it multiple times, told me. And by this point, we had signed a lease. We were moving together. He had a job working for my friend's husband. You know, things are rolling. And so he knew this is going to be hard for her to get out of. And I don't know why he told me. I honestly don't know, because I probably would never have found out otherwise, because I had almost kind of moved on from it. It had been a whole year. But he finally tells me what actually happened. He told me that all the Saturdays, he told me he was producing a video for a client. He was doing community service and he went and like had to pick up trash on Hollywood Boulevard in like a jumpsuit. I mean, craziness.
And you thought he was working with like somebody in Hollywood trying to make it big.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone that I actually had a relationship with like afterwards. And she was very, very affected by their working relationship because he ended up making an app for her. And she, she's very traumatized by her interactions with him. And she cares for me and my kiddo so much because of everything. She's even gotten me work since then. But yeah, that's who he said he was producing this video for. But he was actually picking up trash. And then he used his feet as an excuse to get out of it. They took pity on him for his feet, which did not cause him pain, honestly. Like, I mean, obviously, if he like walked a whole day at Disney or something, they would hurt. But he could pick up trash for an hour. Like, he's going to be okay. But he got out of it because he didn't want to do it. It's beneath him. And so he was assigned to like do a website for some nonprofit theater. He didn't end up doing it. He just skipped town and moved.
Wow. Okay. So did you guys leave LA together and move away?
We did. Yeah. We moved up to the Bay Area. You know, he had been working remotely for my friend's husband. They are now divorced, but he is also a narcissist. And so they did not, once they lived or, you know, worked in the same space, they butted heads like crazy. So my ex ended up at one point yelling at him to shut up in the middle of a meeting. And so he got fired.
Is that why you moved to the Bay Area, was for that job?
Yeah. I mean, I was kind of burnt out on LA. I had asked my boss if I could still work remotely for him because I liked my job a lot. And he said yes. And so I was like, well, you know, I mean, I was ready to kind of see if we could make it work just us without all those outside influences, which now in retrospect, that's exactly what he wanted. He didn't want me to have outside influences. He didn't want me to be able to see my sister a couple times a week and have her in my ear or anything, you know?
Yeah. You deciding to go ahead and move with him to the Bay Area was almost like isolating yourself even more.
And I worked my butt off. Like it was an excuse for him to, I mean, he was like, oh, I'm rebuilding because I moved. But I'm like, you've removed, I mean, every year and a half he moved from his history. He would tell me like he had moved to LA from Florida where he'd only been for a year and a half. And then he was in LA for a year and a half. And then he was in the Bay for a year and a half. Like, so you're not necessarily rebuilding. You have clients all over the country. So I felt like it was an excuse. So I started, you know, I'm working for my boss remotely. And then I started nannying because up there you can make a lot of money. But I was working, some days I would work for 3 different families. I was running all over the place. And then I'd come home and the house would be a disaster zone or my dog had a neck issue. Like he had a, what do they call it? A severed disc in his spine or something. It was awful. They basically said if you were a human, you'd be in surgery the next day because you'd be in so much pain. But it took 3 weeks for them to diagnose because he couldn't talk. I called him. He was out of town crying about the dog. And he was like, well, what do you want me to do about it? I'm not there. I'm like, what? Like the natural tendency to comfort or just be like, it's going to be all right. Like we'll figure it out. He'll be okay. Like normal reactions. He just wouldn't give it to me. And it felt so strange at that point to be like, well, we're either going to be together forever or I'm never going to see him again. And that's how I felt. I was like, but do I want to start over? I'm 31. We've been together almost 3 years. And I really think that it, you know, my uterus wanted babies and I kept thinking about babies. All my friends were having babies and had been married for a decade by that point. So I was kind of like the lone wolf, you know, waiting to commit. And I just didn't really want to get back out there.
Yeah. So he knew that you were looking for marriage and kids and like a family.
Definitely. And we had those conversations. So it wasn't one-sided. Mm-hmm. He was, I want to get married too. I knew he'd been engaged before, but it bothered me because he had been engaged after like 3 months or something. And so I'm like, well, we've been together over 2.5 years. We talk about marriage a lot. What's the timeline? You know, because he was 4 years older. So by this point, he's 35. I'm 31. I'm like, you know, that's not that. I could definitely could have had babies for a decade or whatever. But at the same time, like, what's our time frame? What are we doing? And I felt like I almost had to sell him on me, which was insane to think about because I was earning all the money, paying all the bills, doing all the things. Because once he got fired from that job, his money was very sporadic because he would basically take a deposit from someone and then not produce a website, which was not great for client retention, as you can imagine. He had a lot of people that would get upset with him and he would always be like, oh, creative differences. Like, I just want to be able to make their website the best it can be. And they want it to look this way. And it's like, yeah, but they're the client. They're the one paying you. So if they say they want to use teal, you probably got to use teal. Which he would get mad and be like, why don't you just support me? And it's like, well, but, you know, I'm just trying to think of it from their perspective because, yes, I understand you're the artist, but he would kind of use that as like, well, I have to do creative things when it hits me. And it's like, yeah, but you're busy writing on a whiteboard. And it's like that 90s song, like a little less talk and a lot more action. Like he was all talk all the time. And it's like, do something, you know,
that
and I'm a doer.
Is my
I am.
Biggest pet peeve in the world with in relationships specifically is, or like dating scenarios or something. And it's not aligned action, like words and actions, not meeting. And anyone can say anything for as long as they want. But if the actions don't follow, then it's not true. It does not matter what they say, how sweet they say it, what they say. Like if it's true, the actions will follow, right?
Yeah, it's true. And it's like, words are so cheap. Anyone can say anything. But if you don't have anything to show for it, that says a lot more.
When did he propose to you and how did he do it?
This is kind of funny. So I think he realized how much he needed me, not necessarily that he wanted me, but it was kind of like, well, this is a turning point. She really wants this. I mean, I don't think he would have put it into these words, but just looking back, I can kind of see. And again, I was his meal ticket. So by this point, you know, he had told me he didn't have credit cards. One day when we were dating, I was like, oh, you know, just getting to know you questions, asking about finances. And he said, oh, no, I don't have any credit cards. And I was like consolidating mine from my 20s, trying to, you know, just I had gotten some furniture and, you know, big adulting stuff. And so I had consolidated and paid all of mine off. And so I was like doing well that way. So I wanted to make sure he was too. Well, it came out later that he said he didn't have credit cards because he just wasn't paying. Well, you have credit cards. You're just not actively using them because they're maxed out and you're not paying them. That is not the answer. Like he said, he didn't have them. And he's like, well, I didn't mean it that way. I was like, yeah, but you're lying by omission. Like, you know what you're saying and you know what I'm going to interpret that as. So bizarre.
Like you're hiding your debt that I'm also going to have to be attached to by saying you don't have credit cards, but means you just don't use them.
Right. It's a technicality. No, it's a lie. Yes. And he also had told me that he had not done his taxes. Well, again, I am a rule follower. Like, he thinks taxation is illegal. I'm like, well, it's actually illegal not to pay your taxes. So all this is leading up to, like, I was kind of we were having some more difficult conversations. We were talking about faith more specifically and like what that would look like with kids or whatever. So I knew we were still kind of headed to a serious, he's like, I'm going to make a lawyer appointment to get my taxes dealt with. Like, he was trying to kind of get me to think, okay, you can relax. So I get home from work one night and he was like, do you want to go up to the hill on a hike? And we did that a lot. There were trails around the house and stuff. So we went up there without the dog. So I was like, oh, that's, usually we took the dog. So that was kind of interesting. And it was kind of funny because the gate we usually accessed was locked. And so we had to crawl over this fence and I almost like ripped my pants open on the barbed wire. I got stuck up there. We were laughing really hard. Then we had to like, you know, there were cows everywhere because it was like free range. And like dodgy manure piles, like very romantic.
Cows? There's so, cows in this proposal. I love it.
Cows, barbed wire, you know, what could go wrong?
Sexy.
Totally sexy. So then it gets sexier. Just wait. So we walk up this hill to this tree that we'd been to a lot. It reminded us of like a movie that we loved. And so we would go up there sometimes and just have a picnic, whatever. And so we did that. And I really didn't think anything of it, except he like started getting a little twitchy, like as the sun was going down. And so I'm like, you know, just kind of a little bit of spidey sense there. And he ended up getting on one knee and said all this stuff to me while the sun was setting. But then the real kicker is that he did not have a ring. He was like, you can wear this. I have a couple options, is what he says, which every girl wants to hear that when they're being proposed to. He pulled out this like, you know, sterling silver, like ring I wore in high school that I got at the, you know, the store that smelled a lot like incense. He was like, you can wear this, which it only fit my thumb, by the way. And I'm not super uber feminine, but at the same time. And then he's like, the other option is this. And he took out a Sharpie and he's like, he drew a heart on my ring finger. And then he drew one on his own. And then he's like, let's take a picture. And I'm like, really? Because again, I'm not super, like, I did not have a whole wedding planned or like anything like that. I knew I didn't want to spend thousands of dollars on a ring. It's not me. Like, I'm just not a jewelry person that much. But obviously you want something and you want it to be special. You don't want it to be half-assed, which is what this absolutely was. As Ron Swanson says, never half-ass anything, always whole-ass everything. I love that quote so much.
I love anything Parks and Rec related.
I know. So good. But I just felt like an afterthought. Like, it felt so, not only not rehearsed, but like literally no plan had gone into it whatsoever. So, and then, you know, as a female, you know what the first question is going to be when you're like, we got engaged. It's like, let me see the ring. And so I'm like, wah, 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 wah. Like, there's no ring.
You either had your own ring from when you were in high school or a heart with a Sharpie.
Right.
So what'd you pick?
The heart with the Sharpie. Yeah. So we get engaged and we go like get some champagne and whatever. And then by the time we were getting the champagne, he was covered in hives from whatever we had hiked through. He had an allergic reaction. So all in all, it was very romantic start to finish.
What were your sister and your, like your family and your friends, like what were they all thinking about this proposal and your Sharpie heart on your finger?
Right. I mean, I think they tried to be supportive, but like my one friend that was local there, she'd kind of had some red flags with him of like silly things, but he was saying like, oh, we should just get married in Hawaii. We'll fly everyone there. And she's like, oh, that sounds really expensive. And he was like, oh, you just are short-sighted. Like, and she's like, okay, like, is he realistic at all? And I'm like, no, he's not. And so she had been, you know, she was married and had two kids and like, we'd been friends for a decade. And so when I told her we were engaged, she was like, I'm just really concerned about the debt. And I'm like, I know, but like, I need a couple days to be happy. You know, I felt kind of upset just because she was right. And I knew that. But also I was like, don't pour water on my fire. I finally got engaged. I was so excited. But I also didn't feel as happy as I thought I would. Like, I didn't feel elated. I didn't feel a peace. I felt kind of unrest. And it sounds super weird, but like at that time, Jason Mraz and Tristan Prettyman had gotten engaged like the same week we got engaged. And when I heard that he called it off, I was like kind of jealous.
Oh my God.
In the back of my head, I was like, But also I knew I was never a person who would do that, even though it might have been the right decision. Like, because it's hard. That's so hard, especially when you have like moving parts or, and we weren't even going to have a big wedding because he didn't want that. He basically wanted us to kind of elope, but in a way that people knew it was happening that day. They just weren't able to attend. The wedding itself was fine. The day was good. So we drove like a couple hours to Monterey, which is beautiful. And we had my dog in as the ring bearer, and my friend got ordained, and his girlfriend did the video, and a friend of ours took pictures. But like, we didn't have a cake. We didn't have, like, we drove to Napa for our honeymoon in Sonoma, which is great, beautiful, romantic. But like, we stayed at a Holiday Inn Express, and it was not romantic. And he like went through Jack in the Box mm-hmm. when we were still in our wedding outfits. And I'm like, it was kind of deflating.
You, as a little girl, always think your whole life about what your wedding is going to be like, even if you're not one of those mm-hmm. girls that wants to plan every moment of it beforehand.
No, but I still have that romantic part of you that's like,
exactly. Oh, that's so sweet. We still yeah. want the, I want to look beautiful. I want to feel desired and wanted, and that like, this is the happiest day of my whole life, and that this other person is mm-hmm. also feeling all of these emotions. And
right.
yeah, I'm sorry that that was your experience and that you weren't just overjoyed on your wedding day.
Yeah. Well, and it felt very like, is this it? You know, same with the proposal.
How long were you guys married until like the next big incident happened?
We wanted to have kids. You know, we talked about that quite often. And so what happened was, you know, he had lost his job. I was nannying. I could really do that anywhere, still working for my boss in LA remotely. And he was pushing for us to move somewhere where we could save some money, because obviously living in California is very expensive. So he was born and raised in Oregon, and he's like, let's move up there. So I found us a place on Craigslist, sight unseen. We did like a FaceTime with the family. I knew that we'd have to use my credit, because that's what we had to do when we moved to the Bay, because of his, that's when he had to tell me about the credit cards, was only because we were going to use my credit. So I was like, well, why? You know, only when he was cornered would he confess these things. So we moved to Oregon, and rent was going to be, I mean, we were going to have so much more space for so much less money. And I really liked the nature of that area. It was beautiful, lots of hikes and things available. Like, we were all excited. And then within a week, he was a jerk, you know, just, I was like, why do you have to pick fights? Like, you couldn't give us 1 week to like settle in and like enjoy our new space. And I learned, you know, he would always move, like I said, every like year and a half. But the problem is, he's trying to escape demons that come with him because he's the demon. But it's like, he'd keep changing locations, and then very little time would pass and he would explode, because it was him that was the problem, not where we lived or what was around him. So we moved in December, and we were going to start trying. So I started like tracking ovulation and stuff. And so the weekend that we decided to try happened to be Mother's Day weekend. And it was incredibly embarrassing, because that Sunday at church, they were like handing out roses to the moms, right? And he like goes over to the lady and says, oh, she needs one. She's pregnant. I mean, we had literally just tried that weekend, so it was very awkward. I was like, shut up, you know, like,
just stealing your like joy and like, you're like, that's like your moment. Like, that is your moment.
Right. Well, and like, you have this dream of like telling everyone later when you know, and I did end up being pregnant, which he was like so smug about. See, I was right, you know, and I'm like, yeah, but you could have handled that differently, because I didn't even know for 3 more weeks, I think. So it was just so weird. And then to tell people at church, like, nobody wants to know you're actively trying to have a baby, because then they just start thinking things they don't want to think. And it's just weird. It's really weird. So I was very frustrated with that. And he was a very unsupportive partner in pregnancy, as you can imagine, because he was a very unsupportive partner in general.
Was he overjoyed that you were pregnant?
He was, but also, and I've learned about this after the fact, because I've done a lot of educating of myself of like what happened to me. He was jealous. He wouldn't have said that, but the attention obviously shifts, right? Because you have a pregnant person who has to go to the doctor a lot, and everyone's asking how they're doing and how's, you know, what are you feeling and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, he felt infringed on, I think, a little bit. Now that I've read on it, it's super common for them to get abusive when you're pregnant.
I'd like to say thank you to Emily for sharing part one of her story. Next episode, Emily shares with us the abuse that took place during and after her pregnancy. It's hard to listen to, but her story is a perfect example of what happens when women come together to support one another in times of need. It is such a powerful message, and you don't want to miss it. Please check the show notes for available resources to help you or someone you know out of a toxic relationship. 6 months of broken hearted, 6 months of working on myself, 6 months of broken.